Welcome to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast. I'm Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today, we'll discuss a new study by Grand Perrin et al. Titled Left Ventricular Dysynchrony and Post-Systolic Shortening in Young Bodybuilders Using Anabolic Androgenic Steroids. This article was published July 9th, 2021. Joining us today are guest host Brady Holmer, author Stéphane Notin, and expert Austin Robinson. Let's get started.
Anabolic androgenic steroid use, in addition to being illegal in many sports, has been linked to the incidence of cardiovascular events in strength-trained athletes, evidenced by some case reports of sudden cardiac death and ischemic stroke in this population. Indeed, some of the more well-known and plausible effects of anabolic androgenic steroid use on the cardiovascular system may include cardiac remodeling with subsequent left ventricular muscle mass increase and concentric hypertrophy, as well as an increase in myocardial fibrosis. Fibrosis may be particularly concerning in strength-trained athletes using anabolic androgenic steroids due to the adverse effects on the heart's electrical properties, which may ultimately result in a condition of impaired cardiac function known as left ventricular dysynchrony. Despite these links between anabolic androgenic steroid use and adverse cardiac remodeling, no previous studies have evaluated whether left ventricular dysynchrony is present in strength-trained athletes using androgenic anabolic steroids. A recent paper by corresponding author Stéphane Notin and colleagues published in AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology aimed to evaluate whether cardiac remodeling in strength-trained athletes using anabolic androgenic steroids was associated with an increase in LV dysynchrony and post-systolic shortening, another outcome related to cardiac dysfunction. Stéphane, I want to first congratulate you on a fantastic publication on what is a very interesting topic. Can you briefly discuss the experimental approach used in this study? Maybe tell us a little bit about the participants, the general study design, and some of your experimental hypotheses?
Okay, thank you, Brady, for your excellent introduction of this paper. Just in few words, we know that the use of androgenic anabolic steroids in strength-trained athletes leads to a deleterious cardiac hypertrophy with non-reversible myocardial dysfunction. We know also that from postmortem studies that an increase of myocardial fibrosis could be observed in this population. Since myocardial fibrosis could increase LV dysynchrony, we hypothesize that this LV dysynchrony could be increase in these athletes. To respond to this question, we included three groups. A first group of 15 high-level bodybuilders who reported an important use of anabolic steroids. A second group of 14 bodybuilders who reported to have never used anabolic steroids. And then a last group of untrained control subjects. Importantly for us, all the subjects recruited were relatively young since, as you can read in the publication, the mean age was about 30 years old. To explain in a few words the experimental study, for each subject, we performed a resting echocardiography, including an assessment of left ventricular strain by spectral tracking echocardiography. And we recorded regional strains, that is to say strain on each segment of the left ventricle to assess the mechanical dispersion of this strain.
Great. Thank you so much for breaking down the study design there. And can you just give us a few of the primary findings of this study? I know you had a lot of outcomes, but could you maybe provide us just with some of the key findings of this study?
We observe an increase of LV mechanical dispersion, especially in the group of bodybuilders. And this increase in mechanical dispersion was correlated with the increase in LV mass. And another important point was that on several segments, we observe left ventricular post-systolic shortenings. and post-historic shortenings, it could be a problem because when you observe post-historic shortenings on several segments, the efficiency of the systolic function could be altered.
And I know another one of the findings of this study was related to cardiac hypertrophy. Can you just briefly break down what cardiac hypertrophy is? We sort of know there are two different types, the concentric and eccentric hypertrophy. How are these types different? And how does hypertrophy similar to that found in this study relate to cardiovascular disease or cardiovascular event risk?
In sportsmen, we can observe several forms of cardiac hypertrophy. It depends on how the cardiomyocyte grows with an increase of either number of sarcomere in parallel or in series. In athletes, for a long time, I think since the hypothesis of Morgan Roth in 1975, we differentiated concentric hypertrophy in strength train athletes with probably increase of sarcomere in parallel due to a very important increase in intraventricular pressure during strength training, and eccentric hypertrophy in endurance athletes with increase of sarcomere in parallel, probably due to a repeated increase in a venous return when you run or you practice cycling. However, a few years ago, Long et al. Proposed that this classification is incorrect, since, for example, we observe that strength-trained athletes or bodybuilders exhibited an eccentric hypertrophy. For example, in our study, several of our bodybuilders exhibited also an eccentric hypertrophy. And the classification of Long and colleague proposed to use both the LVMAS and also the relative wall thickness, which take into account the increase of wall thickness compared to the increase in internal diameter to determine the type of hypertrophy. In athletes, the type of hypertrophy I difference since we know that an increase of LV volume observed in the eccentric hypertrophy induce an increase of stroke volume at rest and during exercise. And this is essential to increase the cardiac output and the maximal oxygen uptake. At the opposite, a concentric hypertrophy is observed in several pathological states, such as hypertension, obesity or in hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So concentric hypertrophy seemed related to cardiovascular disease and increased cardiovascular risk events or cardiovascular sudden death. When we observe our result in our study, 78% of our users exhibited a LV hypertrophy compared to only about 40% in non-users. Moreover, we observed an increase of the relative wall thickness in our user group, which suggests a different type of hypertrophy in this group compared to the non-user athletes.
And so, you know, it seems as if a lot of the hypertrophy observed in this study may be sort of an adaptation to the training they were doing. However, you did observe this LV dyssynchrony. Can you talk about what LV dyssynchrony is briefly and why this matters and how this might actually increase cardiovascular disease risk as well?
Just briefly, LV dyssynchrony is an increase of the mechanical dispersion of the strain. That is to say, an increase of the regional time to peak strain at the end of the systole. If the dyssynchrony increase, the efficiency of the ejection decrease, especially if some segments continue to contract beyond the end of the ejection. This specific pattern of contraction is named post-systolic shortening, and is, for example, increased during ischemia, during post-infarction. In a normal heart, interestingly, all segments contract in the same time, but we know that there is a physiological mechanical dispersion with often the apex that's contract earlier than the base. We know from previous studies using MRI or 2D strain echocardiography that the base continue to contract after the end of systole, whereas in the same time, the apex relax. In an asynchronous heart, the mechanical delay and the post-systolic shortening are increased. A post-systolic shortening can be defined as a segment which finished to contract about 90 to 100 milliseconds or more after the aortic valve closure, or if this post-systolic contraction corresponds to more than 20% of the maximal contraction. Okay, in an asynchronous heart, we know that the ejection is less efficient. For example, recent works on pathological asynchrony observed that the left ventricular global work efficiency, which is a novel tool in echocardiography, is lower than in a normal heart.
Yes, and it seems very concerning then that in these athletes with both the remodeling, and then it also seems like there are physiological effects going on that affect the heart's efficiency, the heart's ability to pump blood. And so this is concerning just in terms of athlete safety perspective and evaluating the effects of anabolic androgenic steroids. And so I'm curious, what specific types of anabolic steroids were these study participants taking? And did you have any info on how frequently they were using and potentially how much they were using, what the dose of the steroids they were using were?
Yes, it's a very interesting question. All our subjects who were included in our study explain in details which molecule they used to increase their muscle mass. And they reported testosterone, nandrolone, decabolone, trenbolone, etc., etc. Interestingly, all of the subjects injected these androgenic steroids directly in the arteries, and the mean dosage was very important since for all our subjects included in our study, they reported between 250 milligrams to 1 gram per week. And this corresponds about to 12 to 40 times the physiological dose secreted by the testicle. And to conclude on this point, this is a very important problem since these drugs are easily to buy directly in the gym or by internet.
Yes, very important indeed. And I think that highlights the importance of your work, the fact that these can be readily attained. You don't need a prescription to get them. And so very important findings here and that have much relevance to sort of coaches and athletes regarding the use of these substances. Austin, I have a question for you. Are you aware of any data that anabolic androgenic steroids might have effects on other aspects of cardiovascular health? We see some cardiac effects in this study, but are there other effects that you are aware of in the literature as maybe it regards to anabolic androgenic steroid use on the vascular system or blood pressure or any other measures like that?
Sure, yeah. So I study the peripheral vasculature more so than cardiac function. So I'm aware of prior studies that have found that anabolic androgenic steroids have been associated with a reduction in brachial artery flow-mediated dilation. So that would indicate that there's a reduction in peripheral endothelial function. And there's also some work demonstrating that long-term anabolic androgenic steroid use is associated with an increase in carotid artery intima media thickness. So I found the findings from Stefan and his colleagues very interesting because I was aware of some of these findings in the peripheral vasculature, but less aware of some of the changes that him and his group reported in the current paper.
Yeah, and so it seems as if this study sort of just adds to the foundation of the cardiovascular effects of anabolic androgenic steroids. You know, there's a lot of data on non-cardiovascular effects, and now we have cardiac evidence in addition to the peripheral vasculature effects that you were talking about earlier. And then another question for you, Austin. I think that one of the major strengths in this study was the fact that they had a control group of untrained individuals and a group of trained individuals who were not taking steroids, since we know in general that exercise training alone may have effects on the heart, or likely does have effects on the heart, including the eccentric hypertrophy, which Stefan so eloquently described earlier. Austin, can you just tell us a bit kind of classically how aerobic and resistance training can affect the heart, and then maybe how these changes, these physiological adaptations, are different from those seen in the anabolic steroid user group in this study?
Sure, yeah. So some of the findings here are similar with what we would expect, but as you mentioned, Brady, there are a lot of divergent effects too. So with regular aerobic exercise, we would typically expect changes in cardiac dimensions and also an increase in plasma volume, which would play a primary role in enhancing stroke volume and cardiac output, both at rest and during exercise. And so because of these changes where we see an increase in stroke volume, with regular aerobic exercises, we do see a reduction in resting heart rate, and usually a reduction in heart rate during exercises at a given absolute submaximal workload. And so that was somewhat distinct from what we saw in the paper that we're discussing today. So in table one, compared to the control participants, both the resistance trainers who did not use anabolic steroids and the group that did use anabolic steroids had a directionally higher heart rate. Their heart rate was higher than even the control participants. So I thought that was very interesting as well. Another kind of divergent effect or response that we saw in this paper would be blood pressure. So with regular aerobic exercise, there's the sustained increase in contractility in the heart to maintain an increase in cardiac output. And that kind of serves as a stimulus to increase left ventricular wall thickness, promote an increase in stroke volume with exercise. But long-term with aerobic exercise, we know that there's usually a reduction in resting blood pressure. And in this paper, the resistance training group who didn't use steroids had the highest blood pressure. And on average, they would actually be classified as having stage one hypertension based on the American Heart Association guidelines. So I thought those were both really interesting findings that kind of diverged from what we would expect from classical aerobic exercise training adaptations. I also think it's important to note that the training adaptations to resistance exercise are probably a little bit more variable. So, of course, there's going to be some variability with aerobic exercise. So, for example, somebody who's running 30 to 50 miles per week at a pretty high speed or intensity is going to experience greater adaptations compared to someone who maybe kind of goes on a slow jog, a mile or two, a few days per week. But I think there's even more variability amongst people who engage in resistance training. So for example, someone who considers themselves a power lifter, they may lift very heavy weights at very low repetitions, so maybe 2 to 3 repetitions with long rest periods in between. And they typically tend to eat more as their main goal is to maximize their muscular strength. And their adaptations would be pretty distinct from somebody who maybe engages in bodybuilding and also does a lot of aerobic activity, or someone who participates in CrossFit where they're doing kind of a higher intensity exercise, less rest in between. And that type of exercise might lead to adaptations that would mimic aerobic exercise more closely than somebody who's engaging in just lifting heavy weights and not doing a lot of volume and taking really long rest periods.
Great. Yeah. Thanks, Austin, for highlighting those divergences in this study. And I think, again, that's just sort of makes known the importance of having these three different groups. We can kind of see the different adaptations, but a lot to sort of evaluate in terms of the changes that occurred in this study, evaluating it against the other literature. And I do think it's important, you know, the point that you made to differentiate kind of the aerobic versus resistance training adaptations. Stefan, I have a question. What mechanisms, if you maybe are able to take some from your study or just postulate on some mechanisms, do you think might be responsible for the dyssynchrony observed in this study, maybe at the cellular or the molecular level?
It's difficult to respond to your question based only on our echographic parameters. We know from previous studies, for example, in rats, that an increase of myocardial fibrosis is important after androgenic steroid administration, and that the cardiac hypertrophy was a consequence of a specific signaling pathway, the pathway of the angiotensin II, that constitutes a pathological signaling pathway of the hypertrophied heart. So we can propose that the increase of fibrosis in our athletes could alter the electric conduction in the heart and increase the mechanical dispersion. But it's only an hypothesis since we didn't evaluate these specific points.
Great. And a final question for both of you. Maybe we can start with Stefan. I would love if you could both briefly maybe just share some opinions on the clinical or the practical significance of these findings. So what do they maybe mean for athletes, coaches, and exercise scientists from a practical standpoint?
Important clinical significance of these results is that the consumption of anabolic steroids negatively alters the cardiac function. And that, very importantly, these alterations are pathologic and non-reversible. Recently, Bagish et al. In 4 years ago, published a very interesting papers on bodybuilders who were on drugs and off drugs. And the main findings of this study was that when the bodybuilders are off drugs, they recover their systolic function, but their diastolic function remain depressed. So I think it's very important to increase the prevention, because our experience indicates that both coaches and sportsmen were not aware of this adverse cardiac effect. And I think the prevention must be higher, especially in the gym and for the coaches.
I definitely agree. Austin, do you have anything to add to the practical significance of this paper?
I just would second Stefan's points. I think that him and his group have done a great job here. In the paper, they actually did mention that some of the work that's been done before was in hearts obtained post-mortem from bodybuilders who experienced sudden cardiac death, who had been using anabolic steroids. And as we highlighted earlier, there are risks in the peripheral vasculature. And now this paper adds to the growing body of literature of some of the risk in terms of cardiac function. So I think it's definitely something that needs to be spread, you know, spread the awareness so that more athletes and more of their coaches kind of understand the long-term risk associated with anabolic steroid users. Another thing that I thought of while I read the paper, I think just because the Olympics just occurred, and, you know, we always hear about athletes that were suspended from the games. And something that I thought about both in this paper and other literature in this area is that most of the work has been done in males. So I think a really cool future direction would be to ensure that some of these findings also occur in females, and just maybe try to increase the education about the risk that could also occur in females. But I think we need to have some literature in females, you know, to maybe present to them as well.
Yes, I think I'll second your point there. The fact that we need to highlight the sex differences in physiology and responses to steroid use, definitely an area of future research. Stefan, are there any other aspects of the study that we haven't touched upon that you might like to highlight? Do you plan on doing maybe some follow-up studies on this topic? And what does future research look like in this area?
Yes, thank you for this last question. Since you speak just about women bodybuilders, we began several years ago a specific study on women to compare the cardiac adaptation of women who take androgenic steroids. But we had a main problem, because most of the women bodybuilders had breast implants, and the resting echocardiography was very, very difficult to perform. And I think it's a good idea, but we need to use cardiac MRI to evaluate cardiac function in women. Another point, maybe, could be interesting in the future, is the capability to evaluate cardiac function of bodybuilder during efforts. I'm absolutely in line with Austin on the cardiac hypertrophy in athletes, which is very important to improve performance on oxygen transport during effort and maximal oxygen uptake. And maybe my hypothesis is that in bodybuilder who takes regular androgenic steroids, the cardiac function during effort is depressed because we know that sometimes bodybuilders don't like to perform running or bicycle. Another perspective is to will be to compare our bodybuilders with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and to use the latest tools in echocardiography such as cardiac work and cardiac work efficiency.
Well, it seems like this is an area where research is sort of just beginning, and it seems like there are a lot of exciting opportunities for people in this area to do future research. And so with that, Stefan, I want to thank you so much for joining us today to talk about your fantastic work. And Austin, I want to thank you for joining in to add some invaluable commentary. This has been a great discussion, and I have had a great time speaking with both of you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the AJP Heart and Circ podcast. Our theme music was written and performed by Ray Mitchell. Catch the latest episodes of our podcast at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.